Yo, what is up, Blue Jays fans? It is Brendan Panikkar in the driver's seat tonight with the usual passengers, Craig Borden, Adam Corsair. Gentlemen, how does it feel to look out your window if you can see outside and see that it's still light outside at almost 7:30?
Love it.
It's freaking amazing, man. It's like something good is happening.
Right? Feels so damn good. And when I went for a walk right after work, and 12 Celsius. So I know we were doing this whole conversion last week when we were talking about the weather warming up. So I want to say that's like around maybe mid to high 50s Fahrenheit for our American listeners and the two American co-hosts on the show. Beautiful, smells like spring outside. And my goodness, it smells like baseball is right around the corner. And I have to say as well, we are presented by Stadium Seed Network Podcasts. Hit them up. That's where you can find a whole bunch of good sports content. But yeah, gentlemen, it feels like baseball's right around the corner, and it is. It's only 2 weeks away. How are we feeling about that?
Are we ready?
Yeah. Bittersweet, I guess, because baseball is coming, and I know we have a lot to talk about when it comes to the Blue Jays pitching staff. But otherwise, look, I'm just happy baseball's here. St. Patrick's Day is usually the time where I like mark it on the calendar. We're really close to spring, or it's right here. And so, yeah, I'm super excited. I'm super stoked. And couple that with the warm weather, your mood just changes. I don't know about you guys, but the vitamin D hits me hard. I love it.
There you go. Yeah, it's very exciting.
Yeah, it is incredibly exciting, regardless of some of the news that have happened over the last few days. But let's start with a topic that totally shifted the original agenda, because yesterday I had texted you guys in the morning saying I want to do something a little different other than covering the normal news, which is all fun to do each and every week. There's always something in Blue Jays land to talk about, whether it's speculating who's going to make the rotation, what the batting order is going to be, whatever it is. But we were going to do originally pretty much copying Talking Baseball, the guys over there, the Yankees fans, and Trevor Plouffe, the former Minnesota Twin third baseman. They did a draft position player group by position player group. So I texted you guys that was fully on our radar to do. We can explain it later or do it at a future date if we want the season starts. Rain check, exactly. So maybe next week, if no news breaks at the last second, we can do that. Up to you, though, Corsair. That's your hosting week. But the bit of news, gentlemen, that totally shifted what we were going to talk about tonight was the fact that Charlie Montoyo has had his option picked up for 2022. Personally, I didn't even remember what the deals of his contract were like when he first signed it. I didn't even know there was an option on the table for 2022. But he's locked in. He's locked in for this year, obviously. They're in the middle of spring training, and they're doing pretty well. And they've already felt confident enough to vest his option for 2022. So, Craig, I want to kick things off with you on this one. I don't know if you want to put him on trial. I don't know what you want to say to kick things off. But what were your first thoughts, I guess, when you heard that? Because I didn't see a whole collective celebration on Blue Jays Twitter, but I also didn't see any negativity. So what were your thoughts on that? Because it's a little weird when there's not a polarizing reaction to news like this.
No, what? It's not more Marcus Stroman tweets or whatever it might be. And nobody said the ship is sinking or anything, so we're not going there.
Okay, Hillenbrand.
So, no, it's just that kind of like it's almost like the status quo, right? That's kind of how it felt to me. He hasn't done anything blatantly obvious to lose confidence in Blue Jays Nation, but he hasn't done anything to really wow Jays Nation yet either. Because we more or less have made the joke on this show a couple of times that he's the corporate puppet, right? Yeah. He's just a member of the analytics team. He just happens to be the field general of the analytics team is what it really boils down to, right? So that, I think that's why you get the weird mixed opinions on things, just because it's completely all over the place, right? It's just, okay, great. You showed up. You did a decent job. Let's just keep running with it. What else can you say, really, right? It was, other than the fact that we've talked about it many times on this thing, there's some things that need to change as far as somebody actually having a pair of balls to maybe make some certain moves during the games and whatnot. And maybe the analytics aren't the only thing that needs to be gospel, but I think it's really just because he was a good member of the analytics team, he gets to keep playing.
I don't really mind the move. So I just checked out the contract details. In 2018, he signed a 3-year deal with an option for 2022. So 2022 theoretically is his final year contractually, his final year as a Blue Jays manager. I don't mind it, especially when you're building something like this right now, having a manager sort of step in next season when they're going to hopefully, knock on desk, be in full playoff mode. That kind of puts a monkey wrench in things oftentimes. You know, the lack of continuity can be a bit concerning. Although at the same time, I don't think managers play a pivotal role in the success of a ball club. They certainly play somewhat of a role. So do I mind the move? No. Look, the contract was signed. Play out the contract. See what he can do. Give him a chance to fail. And again, I don't put that the Shoemaker thing from the playoffs last year directly on him. That was, you know, a team effort kind of thing when it comes to the analytics staff. I don't mind it. I still think he's a bridge manager. I still think that he hasn't proven himself to be a manager that is capable of, you know, leading a team, whatever that means, into a championship. I'd like to be proven wrong. Maybe he can be. The locker room seems to like him a lot. There seems to be a very relaxed and positive vibe when it comes from him. So I appreciate that. Prove me wrong. Make me think that you can, you know, be a leader of the squad in at least a surface level kind of way, and I'll be down. But as of right now, I'm completely apathetic to the move.
Is it a put up or shut up year? Is anybody else know that? No.
I think next year will be.
Yeah. I would not be surprised if he goes into next season as a lame duck manager. Mm-hmm. And that's rare nowadays in any sport for a head coach, a manager, whoever it is, to go in as a lame duck manager. But Craig, I think that would be next year.
Yeah. I only ask that because right now they are expected to compete, you know, in one way or the other right now. I think the offense is going to keep them in that conversation. I know we'll get to the old elephant in the room with the other topic here shortly, but it's just, is it going to be him that takes the blame if this kind of thing does go a little sour, or is it going to be this whole, like we were talking about, the analytics team that has really been driving where this team is going and where they're expecting this team to really produce with these young talents and whatnot to as soon as this season? And a lot of those guys are actually at the moment going to have to even step up past the offense, what we were talking about. So I only asked the question because it could be as soon as, if, you know, this is one of those moves that's supposed to make him comfortable for this season, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead, Adam.
No. I was going to say it depends on the level of failure. If it's a failure in terms of how the team is performing and not putting up, say, offensive numbers, mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think that's a managerial blame. If it's the pitching staff sucking, I put that blame directly on the front office and yes. not on Montoyo. But if it's, you know, weird substitutions or relief pitchers being tossed in there or making just strange, shifts or lack thereof or whatever, then yeah, at that point I'm putting it on him. But again, that's pretty rare for a manager to have that much, his hands that much into the game to control the outcome for better or for worse. I think the front office is going to hear it quicker than Montoyo would.
That would not be surprising, especially because I think we're all in agreement, and a lot of Blue Jays fans are in agreement, that the constant changing of lineups are because the analytics department comes down and hands them a lineup card and says, this is the best and most optimized lineup for today's starting pitcher yeah. for the other team. And he rolls with it and he doesn't push back on it too much. Maybe, I don't know, maybe he has a few tweaks and whatnot up his sleeve. Maybe a few of those reasons for the constant changing was a result of being such a young team and people not being firmly established in spots in the batting order. Now we have a more veteran team with Springer and Simeon and guys just getting older. So perhaps we're going to see a more consistent batting order. But in my mind, Montoyo still has one strike or one power card to play if things did go haywire this year to not have him on thin ice going into 2022. If the offense falters and it looks bad on him, you know who he's going to fire? He's going to fire Guillermo Martinez, the hitting coach. Mm-hmm. If the pitching goes sideways, like, and I mean completely sideways, I agree with you, Adam. I would be more upset with the front office not being a little more aggressive by maybe adding an Oda Rizzi or another veteran starter just to eat innings. But there's always the option of firing Pete Walker too, even though I do not want that because we've talked about how he can be a miracle worker in the past with some of these arms they've had. But He has that in his back pocket if something goes sideways in 2021, even in 2022. But I don't know, guys. If it's me, and we're looking ahead, and we're talking about this next year at this time, and Montoya's going in as a lame duck manager, is it fair to have him go into the season as a lame duck manager and kind of dangle a carrot at the end of the season to be like, hey, if you do well and you get as far in the playoffs, you're going to be rewarded with a nice contract. If you don't and we fail on our goals, you're gone and we're going to bring in somebody else or promote Brian Schneider. Is it fair for him to go into next season as a lame duck manager? I don't know who wants to take that first, but
yeah, great.
Yeah, I think it's fair to think that he should be worrying about that, especially if something funky goes on this season where they're not a 500 team or something, which, like we've all talked about, this is a 500 team all day, I think, without catastrophe. We don't know about that. Yeah. Part, obviously, baseball is baseball, and that's why you show up and play the damn game. So, but that being said, there are some pieces to that, and I agree with you that you can't, if the pitching staff has issues, you can't blame Pete Walker for the fact that you gave him a bunch of rookies and you hope to get something out of it. The next piece of that, the offense, if the offense fails, I think somebody is going to be held accountable. And it would easily be, the hitting coach is always the guy that goes, right? Especially when they have Dante Bichette sitting right there ready to go, right? So you literally have the guy that could be the replacee sitting 3 feet down the bench right now because he's already quote-unquote helping in that ballpark, right? Or whatever it might be. So it's going to be hard. I really think it's going to be. I think it's going to be one of those things that they're going to be wondering, they stay the status quo next year or do they continue to evolve with the team evolving? Because there also could be the difference between somebody, bringing in a bigger free agent, manager, bringing in more talent to this team by having the proper manager or whatever it might be. And I'm not saying nobody wants to play for Charlie Montoya, so don't hit me. So,
George Springer did.
Correct, but if you bring in somebody like people knew John Gibbons and they loved playing for John Gibbons. People that played for Cito Gaston loved playing for Cito Gaston. It's the same thing as bringing in the right manager like that. That would be a reason that you could bring in free agents. It's a lot different if you all of a sudden had like the Jim Leland playing right in Toronto, that you can bring in some extra talent. That might be the reason some of those free agents want to come to Toronto too. They're talking about expanding the brand, all that kind of good stuff. One of the ways you could do that is by doing that. Biggest catch is right now with this front office, there will never be an old school manager like that in Toronto for the foreseeable future.
I don't know that putting that sort of pressure or putting that sort of incentive on him is productive, because I honestly, after thinking about it, think this mainly falls on the front office, if not entirely. Think about it. If they're going to dangle that in front of Montoya, right? Look, if you got to make the playoffs, you got to, make a push, or your job's on the line. Okay. Give me a staff that can do that, right? Give me a capable staff on offense and defense that can push me to the playoffs. And we just, sort of agreed that the manager doesn't typically have his hands that deep into the outcome of the game or how the players perform. I don't know that you can put that kind of pressure on them. What are you looking for as the front office? What are you looking for in your manager? Well, clearly you're looking for a yes man. Clearly you're looking for someone that's going to be, not opposed to having that lineup card handed to him and not opposed to having, a 5-inning starting pitching limit for your play. And that's what you have. So why would you get rid of that? And plus, you look at 2013, for instance, before the season started, you look at that lineup and you're like, fuck, this lineup is built to win a World Series.
Yeah.
And they sucked. And Gibbons didn't get fired. Yeah. Right? They kept him for a very long time. Right. So at that point, a manager, maybe just teams, in terms of their construction, may not be well enough to perform as a unit. So I think this really just comes down to what the front office is going to do to put Charlie Montoya in a position to win. Again, I just don't necessarily think he's stereotypically MLB management material. And I do think that they wanted Baldelli when this whole thing started, and he ended up going to Minnesota anyway. So at the end of the day, they got what they want. They got a yes man. They got a guy that's just going to follow orders, for lack of a better way to put it. And that's not to say that Montoya doesn't have a say. I'm sure he does, right? Obviously, if they're saying, like, hey, let Ryu go 5 innings, but after that, pull him, and he's giving up 12 runs in the first. Montoyo has the autonomy. Like, no, dude, you're getting pulled.
Oh, come on. I want to see him keep getting shelled.
So.
Come on.
Yeah. So at that point, yes, he does have a little bit of leeway, but I'm not sure. I think we put too much stock in what a manager is, you know, doing in terms of the outcome of the game today. I'm sure that was true in Gibby's time when he was just a short 5-6 years ago. But right now, I don't think it's
that's how the game's changed.
Weight. Yeah.
It really is. You're like I said, you're a long ways away from the Jim Leland's or even Don Baylor and all them, you know. It's just how it is. You're not doing that anymore. And you got to think that in Houston that, you know, he's not getting all that kind of, you know, freedom that he used to have when he was the Nationals coach and stuff like that. So that's Baker. I'm sorry.
There's two other things I want to talk about, Charlie Montoyo, before we move on to some of the other topics that we have tonight. And one of those, and this kind of leads into if he is the manager of the future. Do you guys think that there's a possibility that the way he approaches his pregame and press game and postgame press conferences with the media, that everything's all ho-hum and good and everything's happy and we're all upbeat and fine, when in reality things might not be fine? Because I can see that type of approach in the way he handles the media, which may be totally different behind closed doors, rub off the wrong way on a guy like Bo Bichette or even in the future Austin Martin, both two guys who are incredibly hyper competitive. How do you guys feel about that? Because I've seen Blue Jays Twitter in the past criticize Charlie at times for being a little too happy, a little too, oh, everything is fine, everything is great, we're having a good time and there's nothing to worry about. And I have seen people give him crap for that, because it's like, no, Charlie, it's okay to say it is not okay right now. We just gave up a lead in three consecutive games and now we're on a 5-game losing streak. Not everything is fine. It's not early in the season. Adam, is that something that we should worry about moving forward, especially as guys like Bo and other guys get a little older and probably start having more of a voice in the clubhouse? Or is that just what we're going to get from Charlie every single year?
Yeah, that doesn't concern me at all. In fact, that's one of the things I really like about him, is that I genuinely feel that that is him. He's not putting up a front. Yeah, he's not putting up a facade. That is probably how he approaches things. And that's sort of envious in a way, because I tend to worry about a lot of things, especially when the outcome is bad. But if, you know, the Blue Jays get trampled, he comes out to the presser with a smile on his face. And I'm saying, that's a little envious. I like that outcome. And correct me if I'm wrong. I think there was only one presser last year that he really ripped into it. And he was like, we played like shit. And he literally said that. And you could tell he was pissed off, and I've never seen Montoyo like that. But at the end of the day, this isn't the NFL, right? I don't think baseball players respond well to the rah-rah and get you fired up and, you know, in seventh inning stretch or whatever. Like, it just doesn't happen. I don't necessarily think there's that much of a motivator factor when it comes to baseball. Baseball is a process. It's not, you have to go with 0 to 100 every single fucking inning. It's more a finesse.
You want to get Rowdy too fired up, and when he goes to the plate and just swings at literally everything instead of taking his time for the pitch he wants? No, that don't work.
No, and same thing with Grichuk, right? Even though it's going to happen anyway. That's one of the least of my concerns. I don't mind. In fact, it makes the presser at the end of the game a little bit more enjoyable to listen to.
Hey, that's fair. So we should be telling Blue Jays Twitter to lay off a little bit.
NFL.
Yeah, I have a strange feeling that when he needs to lay into somebody, he's going to have no problem doing it. He strikes me as very similar to this group. You know what I mean? It's the best friend or the worst enemy thing. You know, there's not. It's one or the other. There's no in between. If you pissed me the fuck off, I'm sorry. You're going to know it. Yeah. But does anybody remember the year that, you know, before that, when obviously we won a whole, like, what, 30 games for the whole 2019 season or whatever it was?
Yeah.
So there was that one game that he came out after the presser or whatever, and they're like, well, who do you think you're going to pitch tomorrow or whatever? And we literally were just grabbing random-ass knuckleballers from Japan off the, and he goes, we don't have anybody else.
Yeah.
So what? That's exactly what I expected to hear. And he didn't try to go over it and sugarcoat it. And it's like, yep, we're just going to throw anybody out there that can give us a couple innings and we're going to have a good time. And let's play minor league baseball at the major league level, guys, because that's where we're at in 2019.
Yeah.
So, but hey, if that's what we're going to get from him, at least I think the best thing that he does for his players is one way or the other, they know where they stand. And the fact that they are getting that, like, almost a fresh restart every day. You know how you always hear about relief pitchers especially, right, are always, I just got to forget that outing. They're supposed to be short memory. No long-term memory. Don't remember that shit you did a week ago. Worry about the now thing. I think he keeps them cemented in that now factor, and that is a big thing, especially think about last year, guys. They literally were homeless. Yeah. You got a guy that's coming in with that, you know, that leadership mentality to it. That is a definite, a big perk that at least you, well, he's happy about things. I better damn well be too, right?
Right.
The final thing I want to ask you guys, and I'm asking this because I feel that after a season in 2019 where, you know, we knew that they weren't going to do anything, there was a lot of losing that year. There was a lot of injuries that year. I'm not sure it's necessarily fair to judge 2019 on Charlie. But then again, he gets a 60-game season in 2020. If this whole pandemic didn't happen and there was actually a full 162, that might have been a little more fair to evaluate him. But he kind of lucked his way in to a 60-game season, and now he has a playoff berth on his resume with an expanded playoff field, as we all know. So, Craig, I'll start with you. If you were to give Charlie Montoyo a letter grade for the work that he's done so far, keeping in mind everything that's happened, you can even touch on if you feel it's a little too tough to grade him at this point because of the two very odd seasons and the situations were kind of out of his control with what was going on. What would you give Charlie as a grade?
I'm going to give him my wonderful, like, what I had as an engineering student in college because I had no time to actually study because I was working and all that other kind of stuff at the same time. So I'm going to give you that nice C+ or a B just for Charlie because I think the fact that last year doesn't happen as a 500 record if he didn't properly prep some of those kids that were up in 2019. I just think there's got to be some credit there. We all knew that season was going to suck. There was no way of looking at it any differently. We knew we were approaching the end of a rebuild, but it was really that 2019 started where we have no idea what we really are going to get out of it, right? Then 2020, we walked into a playoff berth because of some certain things falling, but I still think that team was going to be a 500 team regardless of the fact if it was a full 162. We were talking about as early as spring training last year. This felt different, right?
Yeah.
And in the midst of that, I think it was just one of those things that it's a slightly above average period, but I think right now that's perfectly fine. And if we're still trending in the right direction, I'm just going to say it's just like my stocks, right? They're just kind of going like this slowly. As long as I keep making money, I'm okay.
I agree. I was going to say a B. You can't really grade him on 2019. I think that's unfair. Mm-hmm. Craig's right. We walked into that season with the lowest of low expectations. I think that's why the Blue Jays gave him at that time 3 years plus an option. You know, they committed to watching him for 3 years, right? And I think that's why they picked up 2022 is because even though last year was a success when it comes to a playoff berth, wasn't a full season. I think the Blue Jays were committed to saying, we need to see what you can do with 3 full seasons. So we're going to pick up that option because you got robbed, or we all got robbed of a full season last year, despite the success. So having said that, 2019 being sort of a wash, 2020 exceeding the expectations, but you're thinking, okay, it's a shortened season. What could have happened with the full 162? We're going to give you a better roster now, better than last year. Now with improved talent, you know, growing and falling into their place and, you know, falling into their fitting in terms of the homegrown stars, we'll see what you can do. So at that point, I'm going to give him a B, and that might even be too much. Maybe I'm being too fair with that, but he certainly hasn't done anything to make me think, God, this guy's terrible. He just hasn't done enough to wow me, which is why I think he's a bridge manager. If this year, you know, the team's successful and they're driving well and the attitude and the mood is good in the locker room or from what we can see on the bench and whatnot, then I'll have a lot more confidence in him. But otherwise, I think a B is a fair grade.
Yeah, I think I fall a little right more so around where you are, Craig, a C+. I think would be a fair letter grade in my books. And again, I'm not evaluating 2019. Maybe certain aspects of 2019 you can evaluate, whether it's bullpen management, because the last few years the Blue Jays have had a good bullpen. 2019 they had a pretty good bullpen too, for the most part. And last year, it is true, you have to be able to manage well enough in the amount of games that you're given. If this year was 140, you still got to manage them all 140 games to get them to the playoffs. If there's some cancellations of games and you only play 100 games, you got to still get them to the playoffs in those 100 games. So he did successfully guide them through 60 games to get to the playoffs. So I'm still a little skeptical moving forward. I would like to see, even though we agree that lineup cards are handed to him, I would like to see a little pushback. I would like to see not so much, don't be so rigid in your plans, especially with pitching going into a game when it comes to openers and guys who come in from there. So I will give him a C+. If I had a number to give him, right at a 70, right at an even 70. That's, I think, what I graduated university with, a 70 on the dot. That was pretty accurate of the amount of effort I put into it. Good enough, but also not outstanding. And I think that's a good way to describe Charlie's job so far. Good enough, but nothing outstanding. And Adam, to what you said, nothing's wowed anybody to this point with what he's done. So you can't really get into the 75 to 80 plus range with a number score.
Well,
so
let me ask you, if you're looking for him to give a little pushback or whatever with the lineup cards, or how would you see that?
You know, I don't know.
You'll never know about it.
It's true. That's true.
You know, that shit is definitely kept behind closed doors.
I go back to my previous "the ship is sinking" quote. If that comes out again.
Yes. Oh, yeah. You'll know about that, but if it's a friendly disagreement about it, we won't know about it.
I guess this year we might be able to tell if there's a change in philosophy, because you have more veterans on the team and some people like Springer or Simeon who've been established in certain parts of the order. If we consistently see them in the one or two spot every year, then maybe that's either the front office having a little shift of philosophy or Charlie being like, no, this is where he's been successful this whole year. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It would be tough to see that kind of stuff happen. So, yeah, I mean, that's the trial of Charlie so far. He's back for another year. We've given him grades all across the board for the most part, but pretty in line with what I think that he has done to this point. So let's move on. There is some bad news. I know Charlie's news wasn't bad, but it wasn't also like, yay, oh my God, he's back. This news was, oh shit. There's two injuries now. We talked about Nate Pearson last week. So let's start with him. Pearson re-aggravated his injury that he sustained about a week and a half ago, and it's official. He's not cracking the opening day roster because of this injury. And then today, Thomas Hatch leaves the game after throwing a few pitches. He threw a pitch, clearly in discomfort, threw a few more, and then he just called up the trainer. And where have we seen this before? We saw that in that crazy week in 2012 where we saw three pitchers do the exact same thing. Throw a pitch, try throw another few pitches, and they're like, I can't do this anymore. So he's getting an MRI on his elbow. But let's start with Pearson, because we had started to talk last week about potential fill-ins for his spot. And Thomas Hatch was a name that was brought up. But now that he's off the board as a potential replacement, and now that we know Pearson is not going to be on the opening day roster, Adam, where do you go from here? Because you have Ryu, Ray, Roark, probably Mats, and I don't know, is it Stripling? Is it Anthony Kay? Is it who? Or do you go dumpster diving for a veteran free agent?
You would assume Stripling is going to get in there, just based on familiarity. And I just think he's the most obvious. If it was just Pearson, and you could probably get by. I really like Kay. I think Kay deserves it, but I think they like him to start in the minors, or at least in the first month in the quote-unquote taxi squad. I would love to give him the chance, but I have a feeling, and I think AJ brought this up last week when she was on, I think it's going to be Thornton before Kay in the eyes of the front office, and whether or not we agree we can discuss, but I think it's going to be Thornton that's going to get a shot before Kay, which is unfortunate, but I think Stripling's the obvious shoo-in right now for Pearson's spot. Maybe not as in number two, but, you know, in the starting five.
So no dumpster diving for you, Adam?
Not yet. I don't think they're going to do it yet.
Yeah. Craig, are you going into the dumpster?
I'm dancing on the edge. You know, it's kind of like...
you're peeking in?
I'm peeking in because there are a couple decent names that are, you know, unfortunately, I'm not ready to cut to Porcello in an odd year.
Oh yeah, all even.
But right now, according to, you know, projected WAR, I guess I'll just go through this and be this guy. If you were peeking into the dumpster, because I, you know, went on Fangraphs and pulled it up here. Rick Porcello is the guy that has the best 2020 WAR and is projected for a 1.4 this season.
Not terrible.
It's not terrible, but the also is you're talking. He's coming off of a. They're guessing he's going to get $11 million in a 2-year deal. So somebody banking clearly on that even number I was telling you about. And for Blue Jays fans that are listening that don't know this yet, if you're looking for one of the weirdest stat lines in all of baseball, do a baseball reference check on Rick Porcello's numbers, because you literally watch it go good year, bad year, good year, bad year, good year, bad year, and it's all about even numbers with him. So that being said, then you're going really quickly into guys that you start dropping off pretty quick that are in their late 30s in Anibal Sanchez, Homer Bailey. Cole Hamels is intriguing enough. And then we had Zach Godley.
Yeah, no.
And then you're really getting into it where you're talking, well, okay, let's bring Edwin Jackson back, or Jeff Samardzija, or Mike Leake, because, you know, he was always Mike Leake was another one of Anthopoulos' favorites, right?
Yeah, yep. And Jay Bruce.
So we can finally nail that one down if we really wanted to. So those are really the quote-unquote good arms on the free agent market. And, like, you know, we were just, like, I saw both of your guys' faces on that. It wasn't anything super intriguing. If it came down to the point that right now, if I was diving in on one of those guys, I'd rather just watch the youth movement happen.
Yeah.
Because we've been seeing some really good, talented performances this spring. Alex Manoa, Simeon Wood Richards, you know, everybody has been having a great spring. It's really hard to even think of anybody else at this point. Anthony Kay has been tremendous since really solidifying that cutter and going from there. But it's just, I think you got to be, I would rather be looking at that dumpster in a couple weeks, you know, once the season started, and maybe we are a couple weeks through starts and some of these guys. But I really think it's one of those situations right now with what's going on with Hatch and what's going on with Nate Pearson. Just run with the hot hand. Just grab the guy that's thrown fire for that week or that month or whatever it is, and just let it run, let it go. Mm. You know, what's the situation out of that? Hopefully we're going to be doing good enough on those, you know, the other four rotation pieces. Hopefully, I can't, don't want to say it, but even Tanner Roark has looked okay. It kind of hurts. So, but I really think that's where you got to be hanging your hat. We're hoping to get good enough starts through 1 through 4. That right now you might as well just play the wild card in that fifth spot and hope that Stripling or whoever can fill in that spot and that void just enough to hammer it down there. It's a 50-50 chance to win every night. Because the other catch on that too is, guys, we've talked about it, this. If we can hold somebody within 3 or 4 runs every night, this is going to be a very interesting team, just because of the fact that we have the ability to score easily that every night. And we've been seeing it with the dusting that we've seen in most spring training games when the regular, you know, lineup is in it. How many hits did Vladdy have the other night or the other day? And he had 4 hits, and then the rest of the offense scored, what, 17 runs?
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, that was against major league starters, that the beginning of that game anyways. So there is something tangible there that if we get just enough in that fifth spot. I'm not saying bring Josh Towers out of retirement. Just saying. But that's what we could do, is have somebody in that level of ball and just hope to get enough out of it and let the offense mash like we expect it to.
So it's interesting when you go to BlueJays.com, and I'm looking at the depth chart right now, which is why I'm looking over this way. It's on my monitor over here.
Sure.
goes Ryu, Pearson. Obviously, he's out of the equation. So Ray slides up to number 2. Mats is 3rd. Roark is 4th. And then Stripling was the 6th name listed. So he would slide up to number 5 in that case. So
that makes sense.
My guess is, unless Ross Stripling just absolutely blows his opportunity over the next few weeks, which he hasn't so far, I'm pretty sure he's looked okay in some of his outings, he probably will open as the 5, because I think he has the most experience out of everybody who's left. After that, the 4 names that follow Ross Stripling are Hatch, who's obviously not going to be in it anymore, and then it goes Trent Thornton, Anthony Kay, and then TJ Zoik. So, Adam, you brought his name up. Let's touch on Trent Thornton briefly for a little bit. AJ's made a very good point last week. She really did, when she feels that Trent Thornton would get a chance over Anthony Kay, at least to start. Thornton was really, really, I wouldn't say good, but he was reliable in 2019. And then he came into 2020 and was just not right from the beginning, injured. And then his season was finally shut down. It just was, you could tell, it was just not the same Trent Thornton. So given his experience in 2019 and his few starts last year, would you say Thornton is probably going to be the guy, or between Stripling and Thornton, who would you go with for that fifth spot?
Oh, that's tough. because they're just not. I mean, at that point, I don't care. They're fifth starters. I know it's a terrible answer to your question, but if I had to choose, I feel like we know what Thornton is right now. So I would only do that if Stripling was just terrible.
Yeah. Right?
And then you just slide in Thornton. And I don't know that the upside is going to be that much greater, but it might be just a marginal improvement. Yeah. If Stripling is, you know, terrible, which I don't think he's going to be terrible. I just don't think he's going to be great.
Yeah. Extremely mediocre, right?
Yeah, just fifth starter material.
Just
that's
there.
Exactly. And that's all, just... like I said, I'm thinking that's all we need. I really think that if we get mediocre, we're doing well. Anything up better than
that's
that?
True.
Amazing. Right?
Right. And if we look, if we're so gung ho, not we, but if the front office is gung ho about having Anthony K having starts in AAA, same thing with Zoic, maybe Woods Richardson, whatever, I'm thinking to myself, and again, Craig, no disrespect to your region, but do we really give a fuck about AAA baseball? Like the alcohol? I don't care anymore. I don't care. Like,
I almost wore my shit tonight, too.
I don't care about their success. I really don't. I care about the Blue Jays' success. Yeah. And if it means you're seeing Anthony Kay just light it up, he's earned it at that point. He's earned that spot. Fifth starter or not, he's earned it. I don't want to see Barucki go back in. Right, I don't want to see them mess with that. I don't, and maybe Trent Thorne is sort of a bullpen, perennial bullpen guy. Fine, if he's providing innings and he's effective, fine. But if Anthony Kay is showing that he can pitch, don't, for lack of a better way to put it, don't waste him in Buffalo. Let him be productive in an area that the Blue Jays are clearly sorely needing in starting pitcher. If you have that in your system, utilize it. That's why you traded for him. Utilize that.
Yeah.
So, you know, long-winded way. I don't care about a fifth starter, but if you have a guy in AAA that's earning it, put him in there. Don't be afraid.
Yeah. I think the most confident thing about Trent Thornton is, you know, his upside could be a two or three guy. You know, really, it's obviously peaking out at two, but I think he's realistically a three or four guy. But he discovered something working with Clay Buchholz in 2019 there at the end, and you literally saw a giant leap in his game. He's got that in the tank. It's ready to go. He had a whole year off getting healthy. You know, I really think that now when he gets the ball here in the next couple of days, he's going to get a chance to show us really what he has learned in that time frame. It's not like he's been sitting out completely, you know? It's just whatever. So apparently I have dog problems. Get the hell off.
You have Warren right there.
Don't worry about it.
This is a family podcast, everybody.
But yeah, I just, you can't really go wrong at the start of the season. That's when you sort of, you know, sort things out and get it going. But when it comes to the upside that you have in your AAA system, utilize that AAA system.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, dog fight.
We got a dog fight going on in the back here.
They get too rough when they play, man.
Dog fight. There you go. Yeah, dog fight.
All right, Craig's out for a little bit. He's tapping out. No, Adam, could you see a situation? I was just thinking about this, looking at some of the names. Merriweather's in the bullpen right now. As of right now, I think he has a spot, potentially, unless they want to stretch him out as a starter, which I think they're still looking at. So when you get down to the fourth and fifth spots in the rotation, when you know you have Roark and either Stripling or Thornton, could you see a scenario where you have Anthony Kay ready to go out of the bullpen and Julian Merriweather, and you kind of do like a pairing so that they're both ready? You have like Roark with Merriweather to follow, and on the fifth day you have Stripling with K to follow, or K with Stripling to follow. Whatever it is, whatever that order is, do you think that could be an approach that could work or they'll take? Or would you rather just see, these are my five guys, let's roll with this to start the season?
I'm for whatever wins ball games. And if that's the strength and you're going to split up innings that way, again, we talked about this last week about how I feel, and I think you guys agreed a little bit, to the point that starting pitching, that, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 is sort of diminishing.
Yeah.
And it's just about conquering innings, right? And getting the most out you can per inning. So it's not, in 2021, the most radical approach. And if any team's going to do it right now, it's either the Rays or the Blue Jays.
Right.
So you might as well utilize it and see how it works. And if it's, you know, giving you an upside, fine. Split up the innings however you want. And if that means, you know, I think you said Stripling and K, is that how you put it?
Yep.
If they're each going like 2-3 innings just to start the game and then hit up the bullpen, fuck it. I'm fine. Win games. That's all I care about.
Win games.
Did you catch that question, Craig? Anything to chime in there?
a little bit. If you want to catch me up a second. Now that, you know, live TV.
Yeah.
So, I missed most of it though. So if you want to catch me up.
The question was, could you see an approach where, when you get to the fourth and fifth spots in the rotation, and you know you have Roark and then a fifth guy going, where you could pair people up like Roark and Merriweather, and then Kay and Stripling, kind of just to cover your innings in case Roark implodes like he did last year, or Stripling implodes like he did a few times last year, or Kay as well.
I wonder. I think that those pairings are going to happen inevitably, just because, you know, they're going to be strapped for pitchers here and there and whatnot, just to kind of, you know, keep things going a little bit. Some guys are going to need a little bit of a stretch out, I think, especially in this season. They're going to be going from 0 to 60, from a 60-game season to 162, right? I think that's the biggest thing playing against all these guys. They're, you know, they got soft a little bit, right? So in the midst of that, I think it's going to happen a lot, and I think with the, especially at the beginning of the season, they got that extra roster spot, right? It really wouldn't shock me if they end up having to force, like we were just talking about, Stripling into the rotation for the fifth spot, that they're really going to probably bring up, like, you know, Kay, Zoik, whoever, and there's going to be some extra length guys there, just to be able to get them through those early months, because you're talking that they're going to probably come out and be like almost like extended spring training, right?
Yeah.
4 or 5 innings, and then they're going to be gassed, and you're going to have to bring out the next guy. And I think that's honestly how they're going to end up having to figure out their rotation. They're going to just see who's doing better, and it's going to eventually form itself into something a little bit more normal, I think. But I think the Blue Jays fans should be prepared for the beginning of the season to just look really, really weird on the mound, because I really think that they're just going to be shuffling things around, because there is no guarantees in this outside of Ryu, really, right? Everything else is a complete wild card. And they have, we've talked about it a couple times, it's all about the same level of talent, or you're hoping about, you know, for the upside of all these guys. Even out of, you know, Ray and Matt's, you're still hoping for bounce backs to 2 years ago, 3 years ago. What's going to happen? You have no idea, right?
Yeah, I don't want to scare everybody, and we can talk about this a little closer, but going through the rotation as of right now, there is a very big chance for implosions from 4 out of the 5 guys after you go by Ryu. Like Ray could walk the planet and then be out after a few innings. Matt's could also walk the planet or give up a few bombs and he's out. And then you got Roark, who knows what he's going to give you this year. Because you're right, there should be some credit. He has pitched decently well so far this spring. He ran into a little bit of a wall his last outing, but he did pitch really well until then. And then who knows what you're going to get from the 5 guys. But anyhow,
I want to mention one last thing. I don't know how much you guys have seen of Zoik so far this year, other than the fact that Minor Leaguer pointed out the other day his number was all kind of dipped, just like his sinker is. So it was kind of amusing to see that picture of the back of his jersey. It looked like it was good, and then... Like somebody doesn't know how to put, you know, stitch numbers on a jersey for somebody that's actually played at the major league level. It's not like he's like, you know, 99 or something like that on the non-roster invite numbers, you know. But his sinker has looked completely different, similar to how Anthony Kay has been having the great summer or the great spring so far with his cutter. Zoik looks like he might have taken that step. So it's been some encouraging things of, like, you know, we can see some more upside out of all these guys. But it's like we weren't talking, it's just going to be a complete shuffling of who steps up and takes those spots away.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Good point. So there's a few other topics I want to cover, and we'll see where we're at. But the first is yesterday, the Blue Jays put out what looked like what would be very close to an opening day lineup. So I'm going to read this off to you guys really quickly. I'm sure you remember what it is, but in case you don't, and in case any of our listeners don't remember, yesterday, 1 through 9, George Springer in center, Marcus Semien at second, Bo Bichette at short, that's 1 through 3. 4 through 6 was Teoscar at DH, Vlad at first, and Lourdes in left. So, and the bottom half or bottom third of the order was Biggio at Grichuk in right and Jansen at catcher to round it out. Now, Roark was on the mound, so obviously on opening day, that won't be the case unless something went incredibly, incredibly wrong. But the batting order, at least, looks very, very, very close to an opening day lineup. Adam, I want to start with you on this one. Is that what you envision the opening day lineup to be? Guys slotted in at DH like Teoscar and Grichuk in right, or would you rather Teoscar in right and Rowdy at DH?
There you go.
That's the line.
That would obviously shift the lineup a little bit more, because I think I would have Rowdy a little lower, if anything. Where was Grichuk? Eight?
Grichuk was, yeah, eight.
Yeah, you want Rowdy a little higher because you don't want him that low. I don't want to put Cavan at eight either. Again, I think we talked about this. This lineup is just going to mash either way. Yeah. To me, that's fine. That works just fine. And it's dangerous. At least one through six, I'm thinking, oh, I can't count out my boy Cavan. One through seven, that's just deadly. That's a deadly lineup, right? And it's full of pop. Yeah, I think something similar to that. I wouldn't trot out Grichuk on my opening day roster. They might have to just because of the size of the contract. You want to justify it or to make him a little bit more attractive in trade talks, if there are any, or maybe potential trade talks. But other than that, I think it's good. So I guess, fine, put Cavan at eight if you have to put Rowdy at seven. That's fine. Whatever. Otherwise, it's fine.
Craig?
I'm going to make a sweeping declaration, so step off.
All right.
Randall Grichuk will be this year's Kevin Pillar, traded in the first week.
Ooh,
well, that's not crazy. That'd be interesting, actually.
Tell me why. You know, they've now seen what Jonathan Davis can actually do, right?
Yep.
Worst case scenario, I really think that he's forcing their hand to do something, and they can use Grichuk to get something, hopefully. And especially now that we're talking all this pitching shit that we literally been just laying out. I didn't even care if it was somebody for like one of those guys level that I'm not paying, like I would have to pay Rick Porcello right now from those free agent bins I was telling you about. Wouldn't you take a flyer for trading Randall Grichuk for some random guy right now just to hope that you have an extra arm to be able to chuck out there?
Definitely.
Maybe, kind of.
You'd have to eat a lot of money, though. That's the thing, because if you're getting a random guy, you got to imagine that random guy is not getting paid what Grichuk is getting paid.
I would think so.
So you'd have to eat a lot.
Yeah. Or it's a trading send-off guys around, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah.
I still don't think we're ever going to get David Price from the Dodgers.
Yeah.
As much as I want it.
Maybe at the deadline.
Maybe at the deadline. So, but anyway, back to the lineup part. I can't start Randall Grichuk on this lineup with these other guys. I really can't. I can't think of a way to justify it, regardless of the fact that he is still going to probably somehow manage to run into 20 bombs, 30 bombs maybe this year, just because he has that amount of tremendous pop in that bat. Correct me if I'm wrong, isn't he still listed as one of the guys consistently each year as far as exit velocity is concerned?
Yes.
Isn't he usually in the top 25 each year or something like that? Something nuts. And it's like, well, okay, when he barrels the ball, great. The problem is when he's swinging and missing at 75% of them, is a little bit of a wash there. But I got it right now at a minimum right now for the DH and first base spot. I have to reward Rowdy Tellez. The guy has had one of the biggest springs in Blue Jay baseball history, basically, so far. And the last few times we've seen that kind of production in spring, Jose Bautista hit 52 home runs or something. it's like that kind of nuts. So I'm not saying that he's going to run off and do that, but the fact that you've got to reward the fact that he has clearly put in the work and is the better player, I think, in that lineup right now, and the only fucking lefty.
Well, so here's the thing where I think a few variations happen is when there's a lefty on that, Grichuk is in right, Teoscar is a DH, or maybe Vlad. That's probably what it would be. Vlad plays first. Rowdy, unfortunately, are on the bench against lefties. Sorry. Yeah, against lefties.
And then Randall plays against the righties, yep. Plays against the lefties, Rowdy against the righties, yep.
Rowdy against the righties, right. So, yeah, Rowdy against the righties where Grichuk is on the bench, or maybe Teoscar has a day off and Grichuk plays right. But then with DH, now freed up, Vlad goes to DH and Rowdy plays first base. So if the only variation, I'd probably put Rowdy up near six and bump Vlad up to four and Lourdes in five, and then everything else stays the same for the most part. But man, that top three could score a ton of runs, because Springer's going to get on base and Simeon's going to get on base, and then you got Bo, and then you got Vlad, and you got just Teoscar, just a whole bunch of guys who are going to mash. It at its best, and this is asking a lot, but it may not look too different than the arena. I'm just putting that out there. It's not too crazy to envision that happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to look up our single season runs scored record because I don't remember what it was off the top of my head. But Are you guys in agreement with me that I think Marcus Semien in the two hole is exactly where he needs to be, regardless of what fallout is handing around him? Just the fact that he is the veteran bat and he has tons of pop, and we've already seen that on display this spring. I really am still toying with the fact of who bats leadoff between Bo or Springer, but however which one lands in whichever place, it's still your one or your three guy around Semien. And I think I got to go with the guy that got me there last year was Teoscar Hernandez. I got to play him in my four hole, I think. Yeah. I really don't see anything different than that. And then having the ridiculous of just having Vlad and Gurriel in a 5 and 6 hole in a major league lineup.
Yeah.
That's the stuff of dreams right there, fellas. I don't care who you are. And then the other fun part about this is that we keep missing about and we keep hinting at this legend eventually, too. If Danny Jansen doesn't hit, you're going to have Alejandro Kirk batting in the fucking 9 spot.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it's just nuts. So let me see if I can find that stat like I was talking about, because I don't remember what the hell the teams run, the collective teams for the season score was.
Yeah, no, go for it. I'll move on to the next one while you look that up, Craig. So another topic that I want to move on to, unless there's anything else anybody wants to add to the batting order. Pretty straightforward.
I'm good.
One of the other topics I want to cover, and I thought of one in my head that we can just touch on very briefly at the end of the show, but one of the ones, Adam, you sent this to our little group text today. Two paragraphs from The Athletic, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Saying Buck Martinez lives in, and this is talking about the television coverage, saying Buck Martinez lives in Dunedin, where the Blue Jays will host their first two homestands of the season. He said color analyst Pat Tabler lives in Cincinnati and will be able to travel south for the first two series next month against the Angels and the Yankees. This is where it gets tricky. Dan Shulman is going to be calling from the studio in Toronto, presumably the same studio he called all 60 last year, with either Martinez or Tabler offering the analysis from their homes. That means Sportsnet broadcasts will unfold from four different locations, with one production team on site and the other in Toronto, with the play-by-play analyst working separately. The setup is extremely tricky, said Corte, and I don't know who Corte is, but yeah. Reading all that makes my head hurt.
Do you want to defer to your resident electrical engineer?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, go ahead.
How is this going to work, man?
Time syncing is going to be insane. You know, we watch this game together usually every week, but you're watching it on the live Canadian feed. Me and Adam are watching it on freaking MLB.tv, which even in between us it tends to be off, you know. So just think about that. And how messed up it is with our chat group and how delayed it already is. There is going to be like a 5-fucking-minute delay for somebody sitting in the ballpark, the few people that are allowed to go, unless we're in Florida, and apparently everybody's allowed to go in Texas too. So there's that delay when we're just chit-chatting through text messages. They have to delay it to the point so that they make sure that they're all sunk up just here and there. And then it's got to be broadcasted. There's just this slice after slice after slice, and it's going to be really weird and hard for everybody. And not to mention, you're hoping that they have the exact same TV feeds too. So I think they used in that article, if somebody makes a diving catch in the outfield, are they going to both try and step on each other to try and make the call or talk about it just because they can't tell if somebody's, it's dead time or not? There's a lot of handshaking on that whole thing, and they have to be doing something like what we're doing here, at least, I think.
Yeah.
Because they have to be able to see each other just to pick up on each other's cues or something. There's got to be another layer to this that they didn't mention in this article, because like I said, the technical stuff alone for the audio to be able to on track with all the video and be put into the right places too is a whole nother freaking thing. It's like a freaking making a Star Wars movie all of a sudden, where something could have been something as simple as sitting in the ballpark. It's nuts.
Yeah, it's, to me, that was my biggest worry, is having things not in sync, right? And Craig, you nailed it. You and I watch the MLB TV feed, and Brendan, you watch the Sportsnet feed direct to your television. There have been times where we've done a podcast, and I remember distinctly the Danny Jansen Grand Slam. You stood up, and Craig and I were a few moments behind, and you were like, I don't want to spoil it. I don't want to spoil it, right? And so I understand that there might be some delay. My fear is, when it comes to the radio broadcast, is you got to plan four different audio channels, five different audio channels if you're counting the noise in the ballpark, right? Because some of these games are going to have live crowds. You want that in your atmosphere. How are you going to pipe that in? And if you're going to pipe that into, say, Shulman's Direct, that means you have to base everything off Shulman's feed, right? Because if he's watching the game with the sound and there's a hit and say Tabler doesn't hear it or Buck doesn't see it yet or whatever, it's going to be all messed up. So what I think is going to happen is somehow Sportsnet in their, you know, infinite money that they have in their pocket is going to find a way to give them the most ridiculous internet speeds in the world and be able to just have everything synced up. They've said it's new technology. Right, so they have something at their disposal. In the article, they said this, that I don't think the average person has. And if anybody's going to do it, it's a conglomerate like Sportsnet. And by the way, the person you were referring to, he's vice president of Sportsnet.
Okay.
So he's he knows what their capabilities are. So
no, correction. He's been told what their capabilities are.
Yeah, sure, sure. Exactly. Yes. He's the just get it done kind of guy, right? Eventually, hopefully this is not an issue that's going to be longstanding. Hopefully by July, August, Brendan, I think you mentioned some sort of timetable is when we think borders might be open or when personnel will be able to travel for work at the very least, maybe not for just visitors. If they end up having Toronto baseball in Toronto in late July, early August, then this is moot because everybody will be in the same spot and it won't matter. But for the first couple of months, brace yourself. We thought we were pissed off about the radio feed alone before. You might want to just not, because at least for MLB TV, Craig, you can turn off commentary and just listen to the sound of the game.
Yeah.
I might be inclined to do this. I'll give it a shot for the first couple of games, but if it's all over the place, I might be inclined just to do that.
It's incredible. This is what I don't know. So I'm guessing that they want to have Buck in Dunedin so that he can go around the ballpark and just be really close to the team. I don't understand the need to fly Tabler down there as the article says he might be doing. Why not
Cincinnati?
Have,
that's actually a day's drive.
Right?
So,
but why not have him come up to Toronto and be in the studio with Dan and have Buck kind of be like a Hazel May or a reporter for a little while, and then you have Shulman and Tabler in the studio in Toronto, so then you can eliminate a feed from somewhere, and maybe you have Buck checking in from the stands, or I don't know how they can do it, but it just seems like they're overcomplicating it in my mind. Just tell Tabby to come up here, call it the exact same way you called the games last year, with Dan in the studio with a color guy, and unfortunately it's Pat Tabler. Of the two, I'd much rather Buck, but if it's Tabby, whatever. It is what
can
it
I make
is.
A fun comment?
Of course.
I just had this awful, weird image of Buck Martinez roaming around the cardboard cutouts going, and what do you think of the game tonight?
Oh.
And holding the microphone and just interviewing cardboard cutouts of our friends.
What are they going to do if and when they go to Buffalo, though?
See,
you know, cutouts?
There was an announcement today that might change all these timelines. The Minister of Sport and Tourism and Travel or whatever, or entertainment, her name's Lisa McLeod in the Ontario government, said that to help the CFL return to play, and I know these are outdoor stadiums, they will allow for a bubble if vaccines aren't being rolled out as quickly and they're still in a dire situation. And that would be around June time. So as vaccines ramp up in the United States and they're more available for Americans and the Blue Jays playing in America primarily for the first month or two of the season, let's just say they get their vaccines and other players do, that news to me signals that they may be able to skip Buffalo entirely and be in Toronto by Canada Day. Yeah. And that to me, that's just another reason. Just tell Tabby or Buck to come up to Toronto so they're already here and they're isolated. And then you could be like, yeah, well, now we can go to the Rogers Centre and call games from there whenever they're there. And there won't be a fear, hopefully, of allowing at least sports teams to travel here. And they're even talking about letting fans into Scotiabank to watch the Leafs somewhat soon, too. That's not approved, but it's on their radar. So momentum is on the Blue Jays side to potentially skip Buffalo entirely, but I'm sure Buffalo is still on the agenda for a worst case scenario.
I'm looking at the article right now, and I'm wondering, where's Wagner? Wagner's going to be, he's going to appear on the television broadcast. He'll also appear on radio outside of regular game coverage. So he must be
Toronto.
That's, why not just do him and Dan?
Right?
If he's going to be somewhat better anyways.
Yeah. That would solve in unison, everything.
Fellas. Yeah. Just say, Tabby Buck, take the first little while off. We'll call on you to be an analyst from time to time during the broadcast. We'll maybe set up little segments for you in the pregame show. But Wagner, let's run with it for the first little while.
And I think he would be right at that, too.
Him and Dan are both leads, though. So, like, you can see, I don't, not to say that either couldn't, but obviously Dan would be the lead guy.
Sure. Yeah.
And Wagner would have to take a back seat, sort of, or just feed off him, which I think he's perfectly capable of doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think he would mind. But to me, that if he's going to be in Toronto anyway, like, you're just forcing Buck into this.
Yeah.
Why? Why?
Yeah.
Wagner's fine.
Right.
And that would
right.
solve the radio issues because he knows how to broadcast radio.
Yeah.
Too.
Correct.
Right.
It'd be a nice 50-50.
Yes.
That'd be 50 really would help. And in fact, like, if Buck is going to be in the stadium, like I said, what's the difference between they just, you know, when they think he has something to say, you just bring him into the conversation and it's a three-man booth similar to what we got going on here. That
yeah,
I don't
like
you know
they do with a rash.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but and you can even have that a little bit more loose than that arrangement. I think it would actually work. And then no offense to Buck, but honestly, a little less Buck ain't going to hurt me.
No, I'm fine with it. Yeah.
That is literally how we started this show. Just saying. It was get rid of Buck and the get rid of Pat. So
more so Pat for sure. But
yeah. So
yeah, no, I don't get it. It's a good question, Adam. I have not heard any official plan. Oh, I guess those are the official plans for Wagner, but where he's going to be stationed, because I know that the radio guys on Sportsnet every day are in studio with plastic separating both of them. So they're in studio. So I'm assuming if he's doing TV, he will be in Toronto going to Rogers headquarters every day.
So, like, real quick, I'm reading the comments of the Athletic article,
uh-oh,
and this dude, Steven, actually said, he goes, they still don't really answer the question. If Dan is already broadcasting from a studio in Toronto, what was stopping Rogers from putting Wilner and Wagner in a studio in Toronto and broadcasting for the radio like they did last season? This is clearly cost-cutting. I think this is all it comes down to, is that they don't want to have two people in.
Yeah.
But this sounds like it's going to be more expensive anyway,
right?
New technology alone, right? This is like, oh, so I just thought it was hilarious where you went with that comment there, because all that popped into my head is, okay, a train leaves Chicago going 50 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And so on and so forth. And then a train leaving Toronto goes this fast. How will they collide? It's going to collide.
The answer is yes.
It's going to do it in a very shortly.
Yeah, look, this is making my brain hurt, as I'm sure it's making you guys' brain hurt. And you know what? We'll see what happens. I'm sure there's going to be some more details on coverage over the next few weeks. Look, it's crazy. We are exactly 2 weeks from opening day eve, which is crazy to say. So there's one more show before we are day away from opening day. Guys, I don't know if we touched on this really quickly. I know we're getting a little long here, but did we touch last week on Texas allowing all 5,000? Yeah. So let's talk about that briefly, because that was a topic that we did not get to last week. So some people probably still very much remember this, but for those who have forgotten, because it hasn't been talked about much last week, the Texas Rangers, well, Texas's state is completely open and you don't need to wear a mask. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
So the Texas Rangers were the first sports team to take these extremely loose restrictions, say we don't give a fuck, because they are allowing 100% capacity if their home opener sells out. And to be honest, I would be shocked if it's not sold out, because there's enough people in Texas who would either be anti-mask or just not scared, or people young, or just people dying to do something and going to a game. There's 45,000 seats or so in this stadium, and figures for the home opener, it's the Blue Jays that are playing in Texas for this. So they will be in a stadium with both teams, both coaching staffs, front office, and 45,000 other people potentially yelling, screaming, drinking, doing everything. And I mean, look, if it were me and I was there for the first time, I would be stoked to go, and I would be thrilled, and I would be loud, and I would be drunk. But at the same time, this scares me, guys. Like, this scares me a little bit, having 45,000 people in a massive ballpark. And there's going to be a lot of people who do not wear their masks because they don't have to, or people who wear their masks will have them pulled down because they're going to be drinking and eating the entire time. Yeah, exactly. It'll be picking up all the food or drinks that you accidentally spill. So, Craig, any thoughts on this? Are you scared for any potential for transmission of the virus to Blue Jays players because they're in an enclosed facility? I'm assuming the roof will be closed, but maybe not because it might be hot. But I would hope so. But this is ridiculous. And figures, it's the Blue Jays playing in this game.
Course of our luck, right?
Right.
So we get to be the team that opens up the freaking ridiculous monster Home Depot that is the the Texas Rangers ballpark.
The toaster oven. Yeah.
Or what was it? Some people were calling it the house that a door built, and that's why it looked like it looked like. oh my god, I didn't even think about the Blue Jays being the home opening team. That's just horrible.
Terrible luck.
But it doesn't shock me that Texas is doing this. It shocks me more that the players' union's allowing it. Because with all this going on, Major League Baseball players still have to follow all their protocols and stuff, which is extremely more difficult than it was for last year as far as what they can and can't do. A lot more guidelines, and there's a lot more severe team penalties on point with this whole thing, too. So in the midst of that, if I'm a Blue Jay player having to go to Texas, I'm literally going to go from my hotel room to the ballpark, and then I'm going to run out of there as quick as I humanly possibly can. Because it is just a high-risk situation, and it shocks me the fact that Major League Baseball is even allowing this to happen, period, let alone anything, because Major League Baseball has been one of the ones pushing the whole proper implementation of all these rules, and we're not there yet. We are not even... Yeah, we were talking about before the show that we're not even close to a quarter of the country here in the U.S. being done yet with vaccines. Yeah. And it's very sporadic around the state. So even that quarter is very, very divided up. Yes, Texas is the biggest state here in the U.S., but it's not there yet. And I can't believe that they're allowing this to happen. But I can only hope the best and that the players do what they're supposed to and go from there. But I agree with you that not everybody in that crowd will be wearing a mask, and it's going to cause a problem.
Yeah. Adam?
Yeah, I mean, when I first heard the news, ripped to me, and I was saying, "Oh, that's kind of rough." But then I thought, you know, it's not going to be an issue because all 17 of their fans are just going to be there anyway. So it's
they are going to have a rough year, so it is going to be hard to get people there for opening day. Other than the point that Brendan pointed out that it's finally something to do.
That's what I'm saying. Like, all jokes aside, and I said that in jest, obviously. All jokes aside. All opening days are sellouts. So they'll probably sell it out opening day and just be there. But Blue Jays have done it every season. They have been in the tank, right? They sell out opening day.
True.
And then the next day, literally game two, it's
crickets.
Like no one down the right field line anywhere. The 500 levels are empty. So literally the game of that season, that series, it's not going to be a big deal. There's going to be hardly anyone in there. And I don't think, although I love baseball, I don't know that people are clamoring to go to baseball games where they can just go out and do anything they want anyway and live normally in Texas, quote unquote normally. So I think, all jokes aside, game one, it's a little concerning. Other than that, I'm not worried about it because there's going to be hardly anybody there. Mark my words. Sorry, Rich, but mark my words.
The one catch on that whole thing, too, it is a new ballpark.
Yeah, it's a toaster oven, though.
Yeah, that's a good point. But they have a giant rock wall inside that they can see in the regular Texas landscape.
Yeah.
I've seen it myself.
Oh, boy. Yeah, you're right. Craig, you summed it up perfectly. Both countries are not there yet to have full capacity stadiums. And even when we get to that point, it's going to take building back up of confidence because we've gotten used to this normal for the past year now and over a year, which is crazy. But it's going to take some time before I'm 100% comfortable walking into a venue with a sold out crowd of 50,000 people. Even 25% or 50% capacity will be nervous. I'll be a little nervous for the first time. It'll take a few before this is what normal was like. So the fact that they're just going and just saying, fuck it, let's do it. It's just like, you're within your right to do it as an organization. I personally just did not think a sports team was going to take those restrictions being eased and being like, we're going to do it because we want people here. We want the money. That's basically what the Rangers are saying. And hey, they're following the rules that are allowed in their state, right or wrong, morally right or wrong. So I just hope whatever happens, the Blue Jays get out of there safe and sound and that they're okay. And you know what? So far, spring has been pulled off pretty safely for the most part. I don't know about you guys, but I have not seen a single COVID piece of news regarding any spring training camp so far. And that's interesting to me because it makes me think that MLB pull a little deal underneath the rug of the public eye to get some of their players in front offices vaccinated. Probably not. But
what is that? You know, that's actually a good question. What is the protocols right now for Florida? Is it just anybody can get vaccinated?
Ooh, I don't know, actually.
I think you got to also think that they're the oldest on average state in the whole, country too. So
yeah, that's true. Let me see.
I didn't look, but in all reality, so I don't think it's as bad.
60 plus.
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, still, I have not seen a single COVID scare in both spring training sites, Arizona, Florida, wherever it is. So maybe this will be able to be pulled off, and maybe there won't be too much of a scare come opening day, but it figures it's the Blue Jays, and hopefully nothing comes of it.
Yeah.
Craig, any Twitter questions, messages, anything before we wrap it up?
Call out our fans, because it's been extremely quiet this evening, even though we've had over 150 people listening.
St. Patty's Day, bro.
I'm just saying it's drunk and quiet. I'm going to chalk it up to that.
Yep. Chalk it up to that.
So... But no, it's been we've had great attendance for usual, but it's been extremely quiet. So either everybody loves what we're saying, or they're secretly hating it. One or the other.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
I finally found that stat.
Oh yeah,
I did. So basically, the most runs scored by the Blue Jays as a team was in 2003, and they scored 894 runs that season.
Ooh. Oh wow! Jeez.
And then their lowest, crappiest season was 1978. Shocker. At 590.
But jeez, run difference.
So anyway, 894 runs total, and just the collective normal everyday lineup of what the 2003 Blue Jays were. Catching was Greg Myers, who had a monster year, batted 300. Delgado at first, Orlando Hudson, Chris Woodward, Rookie of the Year Eric Hinsky, Shannon Stewart, Vernon Wells, Reed Johnson, and then Josh Phelps batting in the DH spot with 20 home runs. It was a monster lineup, and that's also not to mention that you threw outfield rotations and DH spot rotations, that Frank Catalanato was actually part of that team as well.
That's right.
Wow.
Oh, I almost forgot. Mike Bordick.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Who?
Mike Bordick. On-time Oriole shortstop turned Blue Jay for like a year.
Jeez.
What never part of the continuing of revolving door of shortstops at Toronto Blue Jays baseball?
Yeah, hopefully that's not the case for the next 10 years, but yeah, it is what it is.
And we'll then see. Future Blue Jay and future Rays managers, and I'm saying Blue Jay minor league manager Ken Huckabee, also famous for taking out Derek Jeter, and Kevin Cash was on
Cash.
The bench.
Yeah.
Right. I forgot Kevin Cash was a Blue Jay.
So that's interesting. Is that lineup actually, guys? Sounds eerily familiar what we were talking about earlier as far as quality, but we got a lot more pop up the middle than that lineup did.
This is 2003, right?
2003.
Jason Worth was on that team.
Yes, Jason Worth was on that team, sitting on the bench, got in a whole 20 games, it says. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 20 games. He had 10 RBIs in that, too.
Yep. Good times.
Good times.
And
get one of the guys I always loved watching, Howie Frickin' Clark.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
The steroids were rich in that club, except they just didn't work.
Yeah.
Not enough to get us over the hurdle.
They really tried. But it didn't work out the way they
just
wanted.
Just look at Hinsky's neck. You'll see.
Like that.
Yeah. Meaty.
Well, we'll keep good times rolling here on Jaybird Watching. We appreciate everybody who's tuned in. Look, we next week, Adam, you're in line to host. And then the week after, Craig, you get opening day Eve as the show. And that's what we're going to do, opening day Eve, just to feel like Christmas Eve. It really will. But only two more shows before we get opening day in Blue Jays baseball on our calendars. But, gentlemen, until then, let's sign off tonight like we normally do with a two claps and a Ric Flair. Let's go!
Let's go Blue Jays. Woo. Baseball's almost here. Woo!